This is Paul Nobles from Eat Form, and I am here today with our happy hour clients, students. I don't know what this would be, but this is where people get to sort of compare notes on some bigger ideas that we talked about. This is actually a topic that comes up quite a bit, obviously, with coaching. It's mental health and how, you know, your body your brain is affected by these things that we're doing to your body, right? And the relationship between the two. So if you can get messages in the chat, make sure to stay muted. There's just kind of too many people and too many different audio variables, and it will just end up messing up the podcast. Today, we also have Becky Avara. Becky is the head of coaching here at Eat to Perform, and she is a good person to know if you ever have interest in becoming an Eat to Perform coach. One of the things that's interesting about Eat to Perform coaching that most people don't know is that you can't be an Eat to Perform coach. I don't think we have one. We used to have one that was a PhD. But since that time and they left, virtually everyone has gone through the program. And so we have various degrees, and then obviously backstopped by Dr. Susan Kleiner, who is both a PhD in exercise physiology, but also a registered dietitian. So try to cover as many bases as we can with that. But Becky is the person that you would want to get to know. And she can walk you through that. I think we recently did a hiring push, right, Becky? Is that still going or is that still going or is that
they are finishing up their training tomorrow?
Gotcha. Okay. So I just want to do a quick update. You know, last podcast, being a month ago, I had just started with weight loss medication. I am currently weaning off, and I am down 13 pounds. A lot of that is helped by the fact that my foot is healed, and I'm able to do a lot more physical activity, specifically pickleball. Been able to play at least 4 days a week. I was lucky to get in 2 to 3. That's one of the reasons why kind of the weight gain happened in the first place, right? And so kind of dealt with that for about 8 months. Started to figure that out. I should probably mention that. I figured out that I had what's called a Haglund's deformity. And so what ultimately I did was I cut a hole in the back of my shoes to allow the deformity. I'm just using like a little Dremel saw, actually, just to give you an idea of the basis for our relationship. My wife did it. I could never do it. I don't have that. I don't have any domestic abilities at all. I'm not an artsy craftsy guy. So my wife has to drill the little holes in the back of my shoes for me. But it has helped a lot. I did have to rest quite a bit. I had to mobilize it quite a bit. But I mean, if it's not 100%, it's 97%. So it's allowing me to be more active. I wasn't walking, you know, I wasn't able to get in 10,000 steps because, you know, there was just so much pain. So being able to have all that back into my life. So it's, I just want to say that there's a couple of things that are happening with this weight loss medication that I think, you know, is, well, one, I just going to tell you, since talking about it and saying that I'm on it, I've had a lot of people reach out to me and tell me what they're doing now. And there's some really bad ideas out there. And, if you are doing it through Eat to Perform Health, I can tell you, you are going to be doing the best protocol that exists, because most places are just giving you the medication. They're not giving you any real, you know, I mean, I heard one that you know, took someone, you know, from 0.25 to 0.5 then up to 1.7, then to 2.4. You definitely would not want to do it that way. And so we're working with our doctors for the various protocols. And so the Eat Form Health people will get that. Certainly you can, if you're on it right now and you want in your lifetime client or something of that nature, the coach can help you, but you have to understand that the whole idea of the program is that you're going to get off of it at some point. Right. And so if you're just going to stay on it, you're sort of missing the bigger picture of what is best for your metabolic health. Right. And so already because of the program that we have, there is just a much better understanding. I am weaning off. I'm in the second week of weaning off. I went 8 days without taking it. I don't know if I mentioned this last time. I might have. I do take it in two doses. And so the dose that I was taking was 0.2. So I would take 0.1 every 3 to 4 days. And what that does is that allows for you to not get sort of ravenous towards the end of the week. Because what happens with weight loss medication, if you don't know, there was actually a skit on this on SNL where Martin Short, you know, was next to Lorne Michael devouring a cheeseburger like a crazy man. And he's like, my Ozempic is wearing off. And I mean, while it was a little bit of a joke, that is a little bit of what it's like, right? It does change, I will say, once, you know, you're at the end of a dieting cycle. I think most people know this. Your stomach shrinks a little bit, things of this nature. So you don't have the ravenous the way that you would in the first week where your body is still adjusting to the medication. I think early on I talked about, side effects, was able to really get those under control with full fat kefir. A lot of that really does come down to two things. The biggest thing being that you're letting your stomach get too emptied. And so it causes the medication to just increase your stomach acids by so much that it's much better to have a little something in your stomach. So if like you like to do fasting, but you find that you use fasting as a tool, so that, you know, you may be hungry in the morning, so you're not hungry in the evening. Problem with fasting is that your stomach will get empty, and people think fasting is the magic, when in reality, the magic is the lower calories, right? And so you still would follow the Eat Form plan. I will say this, I was able to get a little bit more aggressive. I was kind of viewing it almost as a mini cut. There's various people that have opinions on this. I was never going to sell something to all of you if I didn't take it and think it was safe. There's this narrative out there that, you know, oh, these medications are new. There's so many things we don't know. These medications aren't new, and there's so many things we do know, right? So one of the things that we know for fact, right, is that the gastrointestinal stuff is worse almost to 100% when people up the dose too quickly, right? The other thing, nausea is the big one. That one is really more dose related, but also when you take in too many calories all at once. So you kind of have to be a little careful with that. I'm not always best when my Eat Before meals aren't here. With my Eat Before meals, I typically do not have an issue. Some of the spicier Mexican stuff, but I have a sensitive stomach anyway, you know, so it just makes it worse with the weight loss medication. So if it's something like, you know, one of my favorites is the Tex-Mex baked enchilada. I can't remember what it's called, but that's one of my favorites. So if I have it, I have it for lunch, and usually I'll have something like a salad for dinner or something that's a little bit more, you know, more whole foods, kind of cleaner, you know, don't love the word clean, but I think everybody kind of knows what I mean by that. Down 13 pounds, still losing weight, in AP, just getting, you know, really trying to, it's really hard, you know, and I will say that, you know, we're going to have to give leeway to some of the people taking it. And that gets tricky because of what we're going to talk about for the rest of this class is that sometimes people have a bad relationship with food. And so, you know, but if you can't eat, you can't eat, you know, like trying to force it, you know, really makes no sense. But having planned macros, you're going to be mostly good. Mostly when I might under eat or something of that nature, it would really come down to some of the more unplanned days, right? I think there's a possibility I could end up losing another couple pounds. I'll just be honest with you. It's from effort. It's not from this. I'm really, like I said, I'm just hearing so many stories about this stuff. And it's like, you know, oh, it's, you know, you're regaining.
You guys in a while.
Hold on. I need to make sure that everybody's
it's
muted.
It's so dark.
Somebody unmuted themselves there. So, I think the thing that, you know, is really important is that we don't forget the effort component. And so now that food is coming back, you know, I might be able to play pickleball 5 days a week, right? I'm probably not going to. I would probably rather play maybe a little bit longer sessions on 4 days a week, but effort, being closer to 100%, all those things are really big. The only reason why I would want to lose a couple other pounds is just to have a little bit more breathing room so I can stay in the 180s. I've said this before. The reason why you use this is just to make dieting cycles easier, right? And I think in 5 years, there's going to be a lot better understanding. Everybody's going to be okay with it. And so can you, you know, I had a buddy of mine talking, you know, we were talking about weight loss medication and things of this nature. And he's like, well, my wife, you know, lost 15 pounds and she didn't need weight loss medication. I was like, well, your wife just ate less, dude. You know, I was like, this doesn't make you, you know, lose weight, you know, like the, you know, amphetamines of the past or the stimulants and stuff that people would take. This is just something that, you know, blunts your hunger. Right. And so, you know, like most people, I like to have kind of a top end. So I'd like my top end to be 190. Occasionally I'm going over 190 right now. If I landed at that, I'd be fine. To be completely honest with you, I'm fine either way. You know, if for some reason I go back to 200, you know, it wouldn't bother me. Would I use this again? Almost certainly. You know, now, once again, it's not inexpensive, right? But I would almost certainly use this again. And I don't have any problem recommending it to any friends or family, as long as they understand, you know, that the stomach acid thing is real. You have to have a plan for that. If you don't have a plan for that, it will really mess you up. Kind of finishing things up. Coffee, you don't want it. It is the weirdest thing. And I don't know if I'm just sleeping deeper or whatever, but I do nap occasionally. But I'm not really that tired, you know, and probably a lot of reasons for it. So I did put out a post. Most people agreed that, you know, went on it. They drink way less coffee, or, you know, the coffee that I drink now, I still do drink coffee, but it's really more because of the habit, right? Than anything. Alcohol. That's another one that apparently by a lot of accounts, you can drink alcohol and you will not get drunk. So that's an interesting thing, right? In fact, there are people that are using it to sort of kind of help with alcoholism and things of this nature so they can try and get like some of their life in order. So those things I think are going to be kind of cool side effects, because that's sort of what happened, right? Like I said earlier, these are not medications that haven't been around for a while. Ozempic's been around for like 5 to 7 years. So they know a lot about it, right? And the weight loss actually was sort of a side effect of the benefits of the diabetic medication. So if the other side effects are that you drink less caffeine or you drink less alcohol, that's a great thing. Okay, so let's talk about mental health. And like I said, we haven't got any questions up to this point, but maybe once we start to kind of run through things, it will help. Maybe I can juxtapose that a little bit over my current experience. So when you are in a deficit, oftentimes it will mess with your sleep schedule. Not everyone, deep sleepers. So if my wife's ever in a fat loss cycle, she still sleeps 8 hours, no problem. Sleep is like her superpower, you know. So it's not everybody, but you know, if you notice that when you're in fat loss, one of the reasons why we don't want everybody in fat loss for a lot of time is because of these side effects that happen that have no relationship to weight loss medication, but also happen with weight loss medication. So in this deficit, it did mess with my sleep. I am a lot better right now. Normally, though, I get, you know, 8 to 8.5 hours sleep, and right now I'm getting 6.5 to 7. So it's still affecting me. I do seem to be sleeping deeper. Could be the more exercise from pickleball, things of that nature. When you sleep less, your brain is affected, right? And that will cause mental health issues, right? So if you're dieting, and because you're dieting, you sleep less, you're going to have mental health, you know, struggles throughout that process, way more than just I'm hangry, right? It's more of a condition of really depression, right? And any bipolar or anything that you take medications for, anxiety, things of that nature, it will tend to trigger and make those things worse. And I'm not saying this to you so that you never do a fat loss cycle. What I'm saying this to you is that when you do a fat loss cycle, you know, one, it should be in and out, right? That's a standard idea as it relates to eat to perform. But one of the biggest reasons why is because, you know, your mental health, you know, will benefit as you're eating normal calories, as you're able to do more in the gym, right? As you're kind of working on these things that are easier to work on when you're not constantly at stress. Because if you think about exercise, if you think about dieting, both of those things is stress, not necessarily in a bad way, because it's stress that you're trying to get a result, right? You're trying to mobilize fat and, you know, lose weight in that process. But this is another big reason why you have to be aware that your mental health is going to be affected. And I think most of us kind of know, we joke about it because of the hangry thing, but the reality is that our friends and family and our coworkers are affected when we are eating less. That's just fact, right? If you need to ignore that fact, you know, to, you know, continue, you know, eating less most of the time, I just think that's very unhealthy behavior, you know. And, you know, a lot of what we're talking about here right now is this want to lose 40 to 50 pounds or even 20 to 30 pounds all at once, when in reality, it'd be much better to lose 10 to 12, maybe even 15 twice rather than losing 30 all at once, because of the impact that it has to your metabolism, the impact that it has to your brain, and very real chemical imbalances that can cause your life to be more difficult. Becky, every day, all day long, you're dealing with people in files. What are your basic thoughts as you're hearing kind of what I'm saying?
I mean, I do agree that we see people, and you know, that's partially why when you go through these deficit cycles that coaching is very important, because you're able to have this outside person that, you know, hopefully you've formed a relationship with, that they can kind of keep you grounded as you go through the deficit cycles and all of the mental health things that come along with what you're talking about, that those deficit cycles cause those issues. And those coaches can help to keep you grounded and help to maybe help you see things more clearly. And sometimes, you know, it just means, oh, we know that you can push however many more weeks. And sometimes it even gets so bad that we are the ones to go, you know what, maybe you need to start to ask yourself if the juice is worth the squeeze. And then we can talk through that with our coaches and things like that. I mean, even as coaches, we need that.
Yeah, I think one of the things that was interesting, someone asked if we should make a special group, right? Which Becky is going to go, oh my God, no, please, no. If anything, we want to cancel most of the groups that we have, right? We would love it if we could just go down to maybe one or two groups. Currently, really, we only have three, but the training group is relatively inactive. So someone brought up the idea of having a group for the weight loss medication. And I kindly told them that, one, we could have discussions. I literally talk about it once every 2 to 3 days for various reasons. And they always have the opportunity to talk with me in those threads. What ultimately the person wanted, which is what everyone wants, is kind of an ally in their struggle, right? Which isn't always bad, right? I'm not saying that in a bad way. But that's what coaching's for, right? And so, you know, I saw, you know, Becky made a great post the other day, and someone mentioned how much they liked the post and that they could relate to the post. I mean, Becky did a great job with that post, but she was talking about an insecurity, you know, and the woman was basically saying is that I would like more talk about insecurities, which I think is great, right? We can have more talks about insecurities. But what the woman was genuinely saying, in my view, was that I like the fact that Becky feels bad about herself, about something. Right. Even though Becky was explaining how she had to walk through that in her head to be okay with it. And we all kind of want that, right? That's kind of what feeds the internet, you know, is that this negativity, I am broken, I can't be fixed, I'm insecure, and you know, I was born this way, and genetically I have this problem, or you know, all of those things can happen. All of those things can be true. I think the broken part, you know, I would take issue with that. Because, you know, it's all sort of relative, right? But, you know, just because you have, you know, genetics of being tall and carry more weight comfortably and things of that nature doesn't necessarily mean that you don't have options, right? And so sometimes just changing your parameters, which is what I think Becky's post did, right? She allowed, you know, genetically bigger gals to rethink, you know, how they view themselves. And there was another woman in that post that talked about how teenage girls teased her. And it made her feel self-conscious about them. And then there was another person that mentioned a guy mentioning her, I can't remember what she said, but like chunky legs or something of this nature. But the guy was saying it like, you're strong, right? Like you have muscular legs.
I think he said big. I don't even think he said chunky. It was her perception. Yes.
Yeah. But like, I think we have to be real that, I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't jerks out there that are guys, but women are a little bit more comfortable talking about, you know, other women's bodies in a critical way. I'm not saying guys don't do it, but I'm saying if a guy says to you that you have big legs, the guy probably knows what it's like to get big legs, right? The work that you have to put in the gym to do that and seem muscular. Because the pictures that Becky posted is very clear. This is someone that works out, right? And so if a guy at the gym is saying, wow, you have big legs, you know, maybe those tapes play back from the 14-year-old girl, you know, who's like, wow, your legs are big, and, you know, in a negative way, when in reality, what the guy might be saying is positive. And so, but I talk about my wife's legs all the time, you know, and my wife is, you know, I've said it a million times. My wife's the descendant of Swedish farmers, you know, like for her to, you know, for her to be like, have skinny legs. I mean, she is, it's really not possible. Like, she's just genetically not built to do that. And so I have, you know, I mean, I signed up for the strong leg plan. Right. And so, you know, I'm very careful about this because I like to talk about, you know, how I'm able to talk to my wife. But what I don't want people to believe is that they need someone to give them positive affirmation, right? In that same thread, I mentioned that if my wife goes to the beach, you know, she's going to feel relatively sassy. Now, I will say, before 12 years ago, my wife never wore shorts or anything like that. With Eat to Perform, that all changed, right? And so she became much more comfortable, which, you know, she always knew that I was in her corner, but she just didn't want to feel judged and things of this nature. And my wife has this great saying, you know, and I hope there's no kids around, but when she turned 50, she came up with this saying, I'm 50 years old, for Christ's sake, right? And so it's like, I'm 50 years old, for Christ's sake, I'm going to wear the shorts, right? And now she wears skirts virtually every night for pickleball, right? Like athletic type skirts that are shorter and things of that nature, which I'm really happy about. But once again, it's not about my happiness. So when she shows up at a beach, this is what I said in the comment. When she shows up at a beach, she has a number one fan each time. And I kind of set it up like the number one fan is me, but the number one fan isn't me. The number one fan is her, right? How she feels about herself. And then if somebody were to say something negative, which, you know, let's be real, like, how much of a jerk or insecure person would you have to be to comment on somebody else's body parts or things of this nature? Not saying it doesn't happen. Right. On the internet, of course, it does happen. Right. Because there's just a lot of insecure people. I just, as a general rule, we were talking about this morning, you know, and we were talking about people that are happy for you and people that aren't happy for you. Right. And in general, I kind of have a filter in my life that if you're somebody that can't be happy for me, given whatever, you're probably not going to be in my life, right? Because, you know, I have a friend of mine who's a very successful hedge fund manager. I had lunch with him yesterday. And he's top 1% of 1% of 1%, you know, of all the people in the world that do what he does, right? And I'm thrilled for him, right? And part of the reason why I'm thrilled for him is because I found my life's mission, right? I know that I can take this to be my version of whatever success is, right? And, you know, we were talking about it, and he was pretty honest about it because, you know, he has a lot of the things that successful people have, right? So he drives a really nice supercar and you know, lives in this big house in one of the best areas in Minnesota. And I don't, right? And the reason why I don't is because my big house and my car is easy to perform, right? And so, and he will totally admit that, right? He will totally say, you know, that for him, having those things is sort of the price of admission for his friends and family and things of this nature. But he did mention that it's a very competitive environment and that he can probably count on slightly more than one hand how many people in his life are really happy for him. And to be totally honest with you, I just don't know what that's like. You know, I just don't, I'm not around people that aren't happy for my success. Now, there's some people, you know, that might not be happy for your success, but they're not rooting against you, right? I have those people in my life where, you know, if I was to bring up, you know, something related to money or houses or a car or my kids, you know, well, my kids being a great example, you know, we were fortunate enough between my wife's job. Actually, I'll go ahead and tell you the whole truth because it was a benefit of my wife's job was that, and one of the reasons why she took her current job is because they paid for my kids' college. And so our kids don't have student loans. And so that was a big benefit that was going to be. So for me to then brag to my sister-in-law and brother-in-law, who's all their kids have student loans, they couldn't pay for it. That's not something that I'm going to do, you know, and it's not something that I would want them. Well, I'm really happy for you that you're a kid. No, that's not how we work as human beings, right? And so I try to be sensitive to that, but I don't, you know, I don't just because I have something that other people have, I try to be more sensitive to, you know, those kinds of discussions. Okay. So getting back to mental health related to food. I do think the discussion we just had is about filtering your friend group. I think one of the things that's going to be interesting as people start to reach goals and things of this nature is there will be jealousy as it relates to your thing. I talk about this all the time that when Eat to Perform first started, you know, I was updating on my personal Facebook page and my sister-in-law said, nobody cares about your diet. And I was like, well, it's not a diet. You know, I'm eating 5,000 calories. And she's like, still no one cares, you know? And, I was like, I bet some people do care, you know? And that's why I started the page. And I found all of you, right? And so sometimes it's not just about, you know, some people are going to struggle. I don't blame her, by the way. You know, for 10 years, I had talked about various diets and I would gain weight and lose weight, right? It just felt like this one was different. And so I was a little bit more boisterous about it, I think. It was just so surprising that you could do so much with effort, right? But I do think that your friends will change. You know, the friends that I had when I was unfit are not in my life for the most part, you know. Ironically, I just reconnected with a friend who was unfit. Actually, a couple friends that were unfit. And both are trying to get fit and they're trying to do what I did. Right. And so I tell them, you know, I mean, I went to a baseball game with one of them and the other one I was playing pickleball with. And both of them wanted to hear it. And both of them kind of admitted, well, that sounds hard. I'm like, dude, you had a stroke. Like, it's time to become an adult. And he's like, so do you eat a lot of salads? I was like, yeah, virtually one every day. He's like, yeah, I don't eat salads. I'm like, well, first of all, you can do it without eating salads. But second of all, you're an adult, right? It's time to adult now, right? And that's part of the issue. And I had to have those discussions with myself personally, right? Where, I was not a vegetable guy, things of that nature. I'm still not amazing with it. That's why I have the salads, right? So I have the salads and I have beets in them and I have a lot of stuff that I like, right? A lot of stuff that tastes good, that is also healthy. I had to figure all those things out. I didn't grow up in an environment where, I don't know how much I've talked about this, but I've been through six divorces and I've only been married once. Right? So that'll give you some idea when you have six different moms in what, 16 years, because I moved out from my dad's situation to be with my grandmother, which was a little bit more stable lifestyle for me. But even at my grandmother's, I mean, she taught me to cook an egg when I was 5 years old. There was no nutrition at all. I had to learn all this stuff, and I had to help change my palate, right? And I was open to new things, and then that opened me up to other things and stuff like this. So, I did see one question come in. Becky, you want to run through that?
Yes, Alyssa says, I sometimes worry that I get a bit too focused on what I'm going to eat, especially during a cut, but I plan everything and I worry it might be unhealthy. Would love to hear more about that.
So it is unhealthy, right? I think it's unhealthy to have those thoughts, because if you're in a cut all of the time, that's kind of the basis for an eating disorder, right? Now, does that mean that you have an eating disorder because you're in a cut right now, or are you just hungry? I think you're just hungry, right? This is the basic idea of why we move people to AP and PR and things of this nature. We're not just trying to get you to the point where you reach your goals. We're trying to get you to the point where you reach your goals and come out on the other side mentally more healthy. Because you can't talk about mental health and not also talk about the other side, right? Now, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of men that are, 190 pounds that think they might be happier if they were 170. There's a lot of women that are 150 that think they might be happier if they would be 130. That's a little different discussion than what I'm going to talk about. If you are depressed or things of this nature, and it's causing your weight to spiral up, out of control, that's also a mental health piece, right? Both of these are secondary. I think what you're talking about, though, is primary, right? You're hungry and you're looking forward to what you want to eat. I think that that's fine. If you think that it's disturbing, then you might want to decide whether or not you want to get out of a cut or not. But the way to differentiate it is when you go to AP or when you go to PR, are you obsessing about those foods? And my guess is not, because you're eating probably plus 2,000 calories at that. So you can fit in most foods that you like. Conversely is also true, right? Is that now all of a sudden, you're eating, let's say you've been in PR for a while and you're doing great in the gym and all this other stuff. But now you're obsessing the wrong way because, you're obsessed about eating 2,400 calories and is this too much? And I'm not at my lowest weight all of the time. And those things actually play a big role. But I think being hungry every now and again, I would love to get other people's opinions and thoughts about it. Similar to what we talked about with the weight loss group, or really anything in the group. The reason why Becky are here is so we can take what you're talking about and sort of mediate it a bit, but we would love for you to be able to share notes in these. That's why we do them. So I hope that is helpful. I did see another question or maybe talking about this topic come through.
It was that one and it was from me.
Okay.
I was just saying that she's in AP, well on her way to being able to reverse, but hasn't done PR with this yet. And I do think that you'll find that as you get to more PR numbers, then life can be a little bit more flexible and you'll be a lot more comfortable in that flexibility because you won't see those weight fluctuations. And unless you are one of those people that literally has to plan everything, which is fine. Some people are just like that. Then that flexibility will put your mind at ease some.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the thing that always bothers me is when somebody joins Eat to Perform because, you know, they saw a transformation and you know, they come in and do a fat loss cycle. Eat to Perform is Eat to Perform because of performance cycles, right? And if you never get to a performance cycle, you never did Eat to Perform. So you don't really know what the magic is, right? And so we have 15,000 lifetime clients that did that hard thing, right? Rather than just using Eat to Perform as yet another diet and go through the fat loss cycles, until you get to PR. And I would argue, even being in PR for 6 months, you don't really know what it's like to Eat to Perform. Right? You don't really know what it's like to go to the gym with more than 2000 calories or more than, let's say, 3000 calories if you're a man. And so these things, there was a lady, she came in and she's like, you know, I did your program, you know, I was real happy with my results. And then they started adding calories back. And so I canceled. And, you know, I was wondering if you guys do it differently now. Let's think about what she just said. Okay. She left because we were going to help her normalize calories and know what that's like. Why would she need to come back? Because she didn't know how to do it on her own. And so now she got to lose weight again. And guess what? She's going to try and lose weight, probably eating 1500 to 1600 calories. Well, guess what? We don't have any magic metabolic math. We only have one, you know, the body only works one way. There's all these people, all these scenarios where people paint themselves into the corner to think that because of this problem, they can't do this. There is one constant that is always true. You cannot cut from a low calorie number, not safely. Right. Not to where your mental health isn't affected. Right. Because if you go from 1400 to 800, I guarantee you whatever you think the problems are going to be, it's going to be way worse than you think. Right. And if that's the only thing that you're doing because you're playing in this really small window, you're never going to know what it's like to have a recovered metabolism, what normal looks like and things of this nature. And I do get, right? Like not everybody's able to put the kind of effort in that allows you to stay weight stable, eating, you know, 2,500 calories. But, you know, realistically, Sarah made a post about this, Sarah Hoffman Krebs, about how she, you know, she was able through effort to keep her fat loss numbers, you know, in the low 140s. And she just said recently that she's kind of abandoning that idea that, you know, 145 is kind of her new floor, right? What you find when you do this right is that there's no magic number. There's no, if I only get to 120 pounds, I'll be happy, right? You won't. Happiness is not derived from that, right? Will the work that you put in make you happy? Much more likely. But is that suffering? Are we attaching happiness to suffering? Like, why, what is our need for that? Right? What does that come from? Right? What's the seed of the horrifying tree that makes you want that to bear fruit? Right? We need to build another tree over here, right? That allows you to do things that you love, eat foods you enjoy, maybe allow for, I mean, I say this all the time. And nothing will mess with your weight more than, or your mental health more than this. We get held to a really high standard because people have these small windows of like 3 to 5 pounds, maybe even 10 pounds if they lost 30. Most people gain all the weight back in every diet they do because nobody ever pays any attention to the part that we pay the most attention to, right? So we get held to this unrealistic standard that's actually probably how it should work in the first place, right? You should be able to allow yourself to, like, for instance, if you lose, you know, through two cycles, 20 pounds and you gain 5 pounds back, who's to say that's not muscle, right? Even if it's not muscle, who's to say that that's not better for your body and mind, right? Certainly the amount of energy you have would be better, right? And so I know it's the basic Buddhist thought, and I kind of get that suffering is a basic tenet of life. But I don't know that, and I don't know enough about Buddhism to expand upon that idea, but I just think that we have to be in kind of this search for happiness and not cuddle up to the suffering to a point where we can only be happy if we're miserable, right? Because nothing will affect your mental health quite the way that will, right? And I think if it's okay, one of the things that you know, a therapist back in the day told me that I thought was really good, and it's sort of the basis for meditation. Like, whenever you're meditating, right, the idea is that if a thought comes into your mind, you acknowledge that thought and then you let it move on, right? If you ignore thoughts of kind of basic ideas related to being miserable or suffering or things of this nature, they tend to fester. Let them exist, right? Let them exist and then let them move on. I recently had something that worked real similar to that, and just had a conversation with my wife about it because I was just like, you're not going to believe this, right? And it was just something when I was a very young person that helped me to say out loud to my wife. And once I did it, it was like I could breathe, you know? And so I think every now and again, if these recurring negative thoughts are coming to you, find an outlet for that, right? Coaching can help a little bit, but some of it might be counseling. Maybe you could benefit from that. I talk openly about my therapy, meditation. I will say this, I do have kind of a thought process related to meditation. Every single person I know that meditates only sleeps like 4 to 5 hours. So I'll do meditation every single day if I'm sleeping 8 hours. But if I'm only sleeping 4 to 5 hours, I'm not going to make it up by doing meditation. I'm going to fix the sleep part, right? And so I think that a lot of times we put Band-Aids on real problems, and not saying that meditation is not valuable. I've done it. I like it. I think it holds a good place in my world and probably many of your worlds. But if you're using it because you're not sleeping, or if you're abusing caffeine, you know, because you're not sleeping, you know, it's funny. I was talking to my cousin about this, and he literally sleeps 3 hours a day and then he takes a nap, sometimes up to an hour and a half to 2 hours. So he can get up to 5 hours. And I was talking to him about strategies, and one of the strategies was caffeine. He's like, I'm unaffected by caffeine. And I'm like, okay, well, there's one way to prove it. Stop drinking it. You know, I mean, if you're unaffected, it doesn't matter, right? You know, he's like, oh, well, no, I need it. I need it for my job. I'm like, well, then you're affected. And so it's probably affecting your sleep, you know? And then I was like, so I was like, but don't stop coffee, right? You know, just if you're doing four, have one of them be decaf, right? So go to three and then one with decaf, then go to two and two with decaf, right? But don't go cold turkey with it. The other thing that I told him, I said, when I nap most days, doesn't necessarily need to be a nap. Sometimes it's just relaxing. Because I work from home, I don't have to have lunch, a lunch hour. So that's my hour to relax. And sometimes that ends up being a nap. Sometimes it doesn't end up being a nap. But in that hour, no one can reach me. I go to airplane mode. There has never been an instance, one time, even in the case of a death, where that hour, you know, there was some kind of emergency. We've never had that, thank goodness. But I still, you know, if it were my kids, as an example, I know they can reach out to my wife, you know. So talk to him about that. I was like, why don't you just go, you know, airplane mode? He's like, oh my God, I could never do that. People are calling me and texting me throughout that time. I was like, well, you'll be able to reach them after your nap, you know, and then you can have a deeper sleep. The reason why people like him sleep so bad, and this is actually a big thing in the doctor world, by the way. Doctors get sued about this all the time, because many doctors in ERs, they work like 36, 48 hour shifts and stuff like this. They're on the caffeine. There was this thing on 60 Minutes. You can go back and Google it if you want. What happens in the cases like my cousin is that when he goes to sleep, he gets his light sleep requirements met, right? But he doesn't get his deep sleep and REM sleep requirements met. And so he gets physical recovery, and his nap kind of fills in the difference. Many Green Berets, Navy SEALs, they all use that type of protocol to sleep. Right. So, but they're in a disaster zone or in a war, you know. My cousin lives in Baltimore, you know, which, you know, I mean, he owns a few laundromats with, there's been a few wars in those laundromats. I think the thing that I really want to get across here is that if he were to put in airplane mode or go to decaf, he would get more of his sleep requirements met. And because of that, he'd be able to sleep longer. See, that's what a lot of people don't realize when you take something like a melatonin. Melatonin mimics darkness in your body. And so you sleep deeper. So if you've ever taken melatonin and woke up at 1 a.m. in the morning, you're like, I'm awake, right? And that's because your body has basically said, okay, I'm going to fix this part, but these parts are going to go unaddressed. The thing that you fix when you're sleeping, you know, anywhere from 6.5 hours to 8 is you're getting that sleep that allows your brain to recover. Right. And once again, this is a mental health discussion, you know? And so, but you know, between him my friend with a stroke, you know, my other friend who is on a bunch of medication, you know, they're just not ready, you know, and I don't know how you make someone get ready. I only know how to help people who want the help and are ready, right? And so those people know where I'm at. You know, if I got to chase you down, you know, for you to know, like as an example, I was talking to that one guy who had the stroke. You know, am I supposed to reach out to him? I mean, I might reach out to him. And, hey, man, it was great to see you. You know, keep the door open just so he knows that I'm an ally that could maybe help him. But he wants to try a lot of other things, you know, and there's not a lot I can do about that, you know. And so I think for me, I mean, he did not know who I was by looking at me. That's how different I look, right? And so for him, you know, I did not recognize him immediately either, similarly the opposite way, right? But when he spoke, I was like, oh yeah, you're Tony's cousin. You know, we played football like 20 years ago, you know, and it was great reconnecting with him. And I would love, I know I can help him, but I can't help him if he's not willing to make some adult decisions, right? And things of that nature. So hopefully this was helpful. I know we kind of got sidetracked on a bunch of different ideas, but I still feel like all of them are related to mental health. And the things that we allow in our lives that don't serve us, right? And then you have to ask yourself, why is this in my life? And if it's in your life and it stays in your life, it is serving you. It's just serving you in a way that isn't allowing you to make greater progress with not just weight goals, not just exercise, but really your whole life. Right. And so the one last thing, and I'll finish on this note, you know, I like to consider myself successful. I feel like, you know, I've been able to accomplish a lot in life. My friend, also very successful. We came from a similar background. We were talking about it, and one of the things that came up was this idea that just because you don't have it doesn't mean that somebody took it from you, right? And the reason why I think that that's important is because when I look at him or when I look at me and I look at the success that we've had with various things, we both agreed that the biggest thing that accounts for that is humility, right? And being humble on a daily basis and understanding the role of humility and understanding the role of failure. You know, I think a lot of times when people will follow a protocol and then they fail and they don't realize, well, there was going to be an adjustment to the protocol, right? And that's where I think, you know, hopefully we've been able to make a big impact on all of your lives. But I think that, you know, when you really look at kind of these insecurities and things that humble you and things that make you feel like a failure, you know, no one takes the stairs to the top or takes the elevator to the top. We all take the stairs, right? And the stairs basically are built by humility and failure and insecurity and not knowing, right? It's not like if you are listening to someone and they sound 100% sure, run, right? Because it's really those, that open-minded approach that allows you to make changes. And I think if you've been around Eat to Perform really at all, you see a lot of great examples of that. And I also think, oh, by the way, when you follow the path to failure, you get to the destination faster, right? And I think that's ultimately what we all want. Right. So I appreciate everybody being here, and it was a fun time, and we'll talk to all of you later. Bye now.